Hi, I'm Guy Powell, and welcome to the next episode of The Backstory on the Shroud of Turin. If you haven't already done so, please visit guypowell.com and sign up for more episodes. I am the author of the newly released book, The Only Witness, A History of the Shroud of Turin. It is a historical fiction tracing a possible yet plausible history of the Shroud over the last two millennia. Today, we have the honor of speaking with Giulio Fonti. He's one of the top worldwide syndonologists and shroud researchers. So let me tell you a little bit about Giulio. Since 1996, Giulio Fonti has been the associate professor of mechanical and thermal measurements at the Department of Industrial Engineering of the University of Padua. He was a founding member of the Interdepartmental Center for Space Studies and Activities, called CISASG Colombo, and secretary of the Italian Group of Official Teachers of Mechanical and Thermal Measurements, and was a member of international groups for important space missions. He has been studying the Shroud of Turin for the last 25 years and has been coordinator of the Shroud Science Group for about 20 years, which is more than 100 scholars, mostly Americans, and was a member of the scientific committee of several conferences. He was recently named the coordinator of a university research project on the Shroud, funded by the University of Padua. His current research activity is aimed at explaining, at least partially, the process of the body image forming, which is still not reproducible today, the 3D construction of the wrapped man's posture, the dating of the relic with alternative methods to the C14, and the micro-nano analysis of body fluids to better define the effect of the tortures suffered by that man. He is the author of 200 works, including books, educational texts, and publications in important Italian and international journals, most of them on the subject of the Shroud. And today, we're going to be talking about his latest book, The Byzantine Coins Influenced by the Shroud of Christ. So, Giulio, welcome, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Bye.
Absolutely. Thank you. So let's get started. Absolutely. So let's talk about your book. You've just published this 300-page book on ancient coins influenced by the Holy Shroud of Christ. So can you tell us why you decided to write such an in-depth book of this type?
Even today, there are several people who insist on declaring that the Holy Shroud has a medieval origin, forgetting, or rather wanting to forget, the countless traces of the passage to the centuries of the relic in the first millennium AD. Among these traces, one of the most important concerns, the reproduction of the face of Jesus on Byzantine coins starting from 692 AD. In fact, in that year, immediately after the publication of the 8th-second canon of the Trullan Council, which after centuries allowed Jesus to be depicted as a man, Emperor Justinian II minted the first coin with the face of Christ. This coin, which was followed by countless others similar to this one, shows the face of Christ on the front with the inscription, Jesus Christ, King of Kings. What is of great interest is that this and many other coins of the time reproduce the face of Christ copied from the Holy Shroud, thus demonstrating that the Holy Shroud already existed in 692 AD, and that it was taken as a model for those coins. From a summary subjective observation, the similarity of the face of Christ coined by Justinian II with that of the Holy Shroud is immediately evident, but from a scientific point of view, objective and quantitative observations are needed to demonstrate a fact, which otherwise can only be accepted or not subjectively by the individual observer. That is why I published this book, to demonstrate through Byzantine coins the presence of the Holy Shroud in the first millennium AD.
Yeah, interesting. So in this book, you have a relatively long chapter that concerns the facial signs that can be found in the image of Christ on the coins. To that end, you arrived at a surprising probabilistic result. Tell us about that.
The need to analyze the various facial markings of the faces under discussion derives from the search to obtain a scientifically valid result precisely to obtain a quantitative demonstration of the fact that the face of the Christ minted on the coins of Justinian II derives precisely from the face of the Holy Shroud. We know that the face of Jesus of the Holy Shroud, tortured in all its parts, bears particular signs that were reported in the coins of Justinian II and in those of his successors. Consequently, these particular signs were chosen to perform the analysis. Among these, we will find the following. Tuft of hair on the forehead to replace the 3 reverse blood stain that the Trolling Council prohibited from reproducing because all the signs of the Passion on Christ's face had to be eliminated. Various other tufts of hair around the head, replacing the numerous wounds caused by the crown of thorns. Reversed V-shape of the right elbow swollen caused by a beating. Longer hair on the left due to the probable partial tearing of those on the right during torture. Swelling on the right cheekbone probably caused by a blow with a stick. Ringlet in the lower left hair. Hair detached from the face and lack of ears due to the probable presence of a chin guard. T-shape of the nose and eyebrows. Eyes closed and large. Long mustache. Long asymmetrical and crooked nose. Protruding lower lip and lack of beard below it. Two-part beard. Notch in the right beard because it was partially torn away. Tears under the right eyelid. Tears under the right eyelid. We see these marks in the slide N3, where we see the gold coin of Justinian II, the shroud face, and the overlap of both. Obviously, all these markings generate a unique facial depiction. From a probabilistic analysis, based on the Bayes formula from statistics, which considers these particular markings on the coins of Justinian II, it appears that the Byzantine engraver who obtained the results had approximately 1 chance in a billion of obtaining that result without having observed the Holy Shroud. These, in slide 4, are other coins that show the face of Christ, of Basil II and Constantine VII, for example, which show different faces. If we make a comparison between the 3 coins, each of these faces highlights very particular shroud-like features. For example, the one of Constantine VII shows us a very particular swelling on the right cheekbone, and the hair much longer on the right than on the left. This means that the engraver chose to depict certain features to highlight that this image is derived from the image of the man in the shroud. The one below is a coin I had struck that is possibly available upon request, where there is the face of the shroud copied as best as possible from that of Justinian II.
Yeah, thank you. The what I found is the different markings are very interesting, and that you found on the coins, and then the probabilistic result that you have. So you also looked at many different coins. So tell us about some of the different coins with the image of Jesus, how Byzantine Jesus coins differ from others across Europe.
Starting from the 7th century AD and even after the fall of Constantinople in 1204, when the Holy Shroud was brought to Europe, we have a notable diffusion of coins depicting the face of Christ on the shroud, not only in the Byzantine Empire, but throughout the world, from Spain to Russia, from England to Italy. Two aspects, however, make the depictions of Christ less important than those minted in the Byzantine Empire. The techniques for reproducing faces and figures in general on coins were much more advanced in the Byzantine Empire compared to those of other states of that time, and consequently many more details can be distinguished, which facilitate the identification of the face of Christ minted with that of the Holy Shroud image. As I showed, for example, on the coin of Christ minted by Constantine VII. 2. The distance of some states from Constantinople where the image of the Holy Shroud was preserved made it more difficult for the engravers there to directly observe the face of Jesus of the Holy Shroud. They most likely had to refer only to verbal descriptions or copies that were not too faithful to the original, resulting in a less similar result. So Byzantine coins are those that best represent the face of Christ in the various shroud details.
Yeah, thank you. One thing that I really found interesting was not only the study of the coins, but also the dress that Jesus Christ had. So why did you study the different types of dress depicted with the personalities on the Byzantine coins? Which were the most important and what came out of that?
Ancient Byzantine coins depict the various images dressed in various ways and are very different from those of people today. Jesus Christ is also depicted dressed in an uncommon way on these coins, and therefore I wondered if those clothes, chosen by Byzantine engravers, had any particular meaning. This is why I carried out a study on the clothes worn in antiquity, in particular during the Roman Empire first, and then the Byzantine Empire. Among these clothes, I saw that the most interesting for this purpose were the hamadion and the loros. The hamadion was an item of clothing used starting in ancient Greece, which initially played the role of a coat, then used on its own as a dress. It was worn over one shoulder, but did not require fixing with the fibula, a brooch, as other clothes required at the time. The loros was a long stole, narrow and embroidered with precious stones, which was wrapped around the shoulders and made to fall over the left hand. It was one of the most important formal and distinctive pieces of Byzantine clothing, and was worn only by the imperial family and some of the highest dignitaries of the court. In fact, when we look at the depictions of the various Byzantine emperors on the back of these coins, where we see the face of Christ, and behind the emperors or the families of emperors, most of them were dressed in loros. One fundamental fact happened, though. Starting from the 1st century AD, the loros fell into disuse and then reappeared around the 7th century AD in two distinct forms, the highly embroidered and embellished traditional donos and the simplified, much poorer donos, which was most likely directly influenced by the spread of depictions of Jesus wrapped in the Holy Shroud. In this diagram, I have reported what I understood about the possible development of clothes over time. We see the imperial and liturgical clothes, and in correspondence we see the Shroud of Christ. To date, theologians cannot say what the origin of the priestly stole is. It is curious to observe that the simplified donos was probably at the origin of the priest's stole, which was supposed to represent the Holy Shroud.
Yeah, very interesting. I never would have thought about the different ways that the cloth was draped over the body, over the living Christ, and generally even over others, and whether it was a hymation or a loros or otherwise. Very interesting on that. So now you've made some assumptions about Christ on the throne. Can you tell us about these hypotheses and how these images connect to the Holy Shroud?
The study of Byzantine coins depicting Jesus Christ is very interesting, but I believe that it has not yet been sufficiently in-depth by numismatic experts, especially because few of them have known in detail about the Holy Shroud. For example, now dated numismatic studies describe Christ depicted on the coins of Theodora Porphyrogenita from AD 1055 to 1056 as Christ standing facing out on a footstool, while the depiction corresponds to Jesus standing and coming out of the tomb wrapped in the Holy Shroud, as is also confirmed by similar images typical of Russian iconography. In the book, I bring some examples of Russian iconography where we see that Jesus is not standing on a stool, but is coming out of a chest that was supposed to represent the Holy Sepulchre. Another interesting fact, but overlooked by numismatic movements, is the depiction of Christ on the throne, with the right foot smaller than the left and rotated towards the right. Some try to explain this singular depiction as a perspective effect sought by the engraver of the coin. But the real cause must instead be sought in the fact that in the era, there was the so-called tradition of the lame Christ. This is also confirmed by the Orthodox crucifix, which shows the lowest horizontal bar slanting upwards to the right, precisely to recall the smaller right foot of the lame Christ. This tradition obviously derives from the fact that, if we observe the dorsal image of the Holy Shroud, the foot appears smaller and the leg shorter. But this appearance is justified by the realistic depiction of the wrapping of Jesus' left foot, which was nailed superimposed on the right, and therefore the resulting imprint of the 2 feet obviously does not present these plates symmetrically with respect to each other. But it seems that one foot is smaller than the other.
Yeah, I found that part of your book to be one of the most interesting. Now, you also mention in the book that the cloth that Jesus wears in the coins, minted from Justinian II, could be the Holy Shroud. How did you arrive at this conclusion?
As mentioned before, Jesus's clothes, in my opinion, referred to the shroud reported as a loros or hamadion. a clear reference to the Holy Shroud depicted with Christ in Byzantine coinage can be found in the bowl of coins of electrum, an alloy of gold and silver and small amounts of copper, minted by Manuel I, Komnenos, between AD 1143 and 1180. Three different types of depictions of Christ can be observed in these coins. The first is the traditional one of Christ on the throne raising his right hand in blessing, and here we have several other emperors reporting exactly the blessing of Christ. The second is the one of Christ on the throne who blesses with his right hand, not raised but partially wrapped in the holy shroud, depicted as a simplified laurus. The third, on the right, is instead that of Christ no longer on the throne, but standing and coming out of the tomb, no longer blessing because he holds the holy shroud wrapped in his right hand like a simplified laurus. At this point, it is obvious to ask why Jesus in this last depiction does not bless as he normally does in all the Byzantine coins that depict him. And the most obvious answer seems to be the one relating to the fact that Jesus holds in his hand and shows an object worthier of his blessing, the holy shroud, proof of his resurrection.
Yeah, I was fascinated how you put this together, and possibly realizing that the shroud was the cloth that he was wearing while on the throne. So now you also made various comparisons with images of Christ depicted both on the coins and on other paintings. Tell us about that.
It must be taken into account that even today, some numismatists, probably not well informed on the subject, believe that the images of Christ minted by Justinian II, starting from 692 AD, closely resembled the shroud face. In fact, it was precisely the face of Christ reproduced on the Holy Shroud that was copied from the Byzantine coins. How to prove them wrong? Obviously, this is nonsense, but at the end of the book, I wanted to give a quantitative and not just qualitative demonstration of it, as is normally done in the various discussions. To do this, I performed a comparative analysis of somatic details present in the face of Christ depicted in the Holy Shroud with those of various faces of Christ reproduced in some Byzantine coins and those reproduced by other artists. The analysis consisted of a series of cross comparisons between the various images under examination, assigning unequal values considering the following details: the face as a whole, the shape of hair, the forehead and eyebrows, the eyes, nose, split beard, mustache and lower lip. Combining these results in a mathematical matrix form, I obtained results that I thought were unexpected.
Very fascinating. So what results did you get?
Well, results emerged that were completely unexpected, but which I think are very reliable for their accuracy and which I consider very interesting because I arrived at an unexpected but important result to prove the authenticity of the Holy Shroud. Without going into numerical detail, which I don't think will be of interest to all listeners, I summarize the main results below. When making a copy of a subject, some details considered secondary by the artist are perhaps unconsciously forgotten, and subjective information that the artist had previously acquired in reference to that object is instead involuntarily added. For example, in the presence of a typically asymmetrical face like that of Holy Shroud, the artist involuntarily tends to make it more symmetrical in accordance with his own reference model of the human face. It was clear that the face of Christ from the Holy Shroud must necessarily have been the reference face because it contains a significantly higher number of details than the reproduced copies. From a cross comparison between all the values taken into consideration in the matrix analysis done also considering faces copied for more or less detailed artistic creations, it turned out that the image of the face of Christ in the Holy Shroud is the one with the richest details compared to any artistic creation. I consider this result very important because, even if it is performed on a limited number of reference samples, if verified with more in-depth studies in the near future, it would be the first quantitative result that shows us the Holy Shroud image is an archeopoeita image, i.e., not made by human hands. This is because human artists taken aren't able to impress on their depictions the very high quantity of details present on the face of Christ in the Holy Shroud. In conclusion, from whatever point of view the Holy Shroud is observed, whether scientific, historical, artistic, or numismatic, it is always clear that, if preconceptions are put aside, Jesus always clearly manifests himself in his resurrection sheet.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. The whole book, I think, had many, many different conclusions, and great way to study the coins and look at the different cloths and the images of the face, develop a probabilistic model of whether the shroud influenced these coins. And then, of course, if it did influence those coins in the 690s AD and later, then that means that it's another stake against the radiocarbon dating, which came up with the 1260 to 1390 dating. So thank you for that. Anything else that you would like to add, Giulio?
Thank you very much for all. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Thank you. So, Giulio, you've been awesome. And I really appreciate your time today. And thank you for participating. You've really helped me and others learn more about the coins and what is actually on all of the Jesus Christ coins. Now, your book here in the U.S. and I guess worldwide, called The Byzantine Coins Influenced by the Shroud of Christ, Byzantine Coins Influenced by the Shroud of Christ, is available on Amazon and many other places. So with that, please stay tuned for many other videos in this series of the backstory on the Shroud of Turin. And please visit guypowell.com and sign up for more episodes. Giulio, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye now.